Hi, friends, and welcome to Sermonsmith. Sermonsmith is a podcast of interviews with pastors, preachers, church leaders about their sermon preparation process and what that looks like. Welcome to 2014. A few things to tell you about before we get into our latest interview. First of all, I just wanted to say thanks for some of the feedback I've got. Well, thanks for all of the feedback I've gotten. I really haven't gotten any negative feedback, and I'm thankful to hear emails, tweets, Facebook comments, all of that from people who have been saying how helpful the podcast is for you, blog posts even. So thanks for sharing those. Thanks for giving me that feedback. I'm glad to know that this is really resonating with some people. Honestly, I enjoy doing it so much. I'm sure I'd probably do it even if nobody was listening but me. But it's great to know that others are getting something out of it as well. And I hope it's scratching an itch for many. And along those lines, I'm sure there are others who would benefit from Sermonsmith. So I'd love it if you could help us spread the word. If you'd be willing to tweet, write a blog post, share it on Facebook. Our Twitter account is @Sermonsmith. You can find us on Facebook. Just search for Sermonsmith. You can find our page. Word of mouth is really the best way. We're going to help other people find these conversations that we're having. And I love that I'm getting to expose some good sermon preparation processes and people behind them to others. The other way you can help others find the show is leaving us a review on iTunes. I just know from a lot of my podcasting friends that iTunes especially seems to really take note when a podcast is getting a lot of reviews, and that helps it get featured and helps other people find it. Also, just make sure that you know, I know I've mentioned it a few times, but we keep a database of all of the books that have been mentioned, the gear that pastors are using, whether it be software, hardware, analog stuff. We're trying to build a database of what everybody's using, so you can come visit the website and see what's being talked about. You can see shows, links to shows where specific people talked about specific things. So you might do that to see if there's anything that's interesting to you, or see if anybody's using similar tools as you are, or tools you want to learn about. And of course, one of the ways you can help support the show is all of those are linked. They're affiliate links. So if you buy a book from there off Amazon, that helps us cover some of the costs for the show, you know, for hosting and storing things online. Let's get into our first interview. It is with Philip Nation. I've had a number of people ask me, hey, can you try to bring in some people who don't get to focus as much of their time every week on sermon preparation? Maybe they're bivocational specifically, or maybe they have lots of other roles in their churches that they're trying to manage. But I Googled bivocational sermon preparation, which I'd encourage you to do. The first link that came up for me was a blog post written by Philip Nation, where he's in that exact situation. He preaches almost every week and yet works a 40-hour-a-week job outside of the church where he preaches. I reached out to Philip, and he readily accepted the invitation to come and be a guest. So that's what follows. One note, I got a brand new cable modem. The cable company told me I needed a brand new one the day before this interview. And so we were having some problems. I don't know if it was because of my cable modem or Skype, but there were a few times, well, really, multiple times where the podcast, the interview just cut out on us. And so there's a few places where you might notice that, where I feel like it was disruptive to what his train of thought was. I actually left a couple seconds of silence in there so that you would know that, but I didn't want to edit it out because I wanted you to catch the stream. There's a few other places where you might not even notice because we were able to edit it pretty well or go back and rehash what he'd been saying. So I'm thankful for Philip's patience as we work through that. So without further ado, this is Philip Nation and our first interview of 2014. Philip, how are you?
Doing great. I appreciate the opportunity to share with you today.
Yeah, and Philip, I'm excited to have you on. I've had a number of people email me, tweet me, comments here and there talking about what does it look like for someone who's bivocational to do sermon preparation? And I'm bivocational, so it wouldn't be very interesting to interview myself, but I know that there's plenty of others who are. And I found you because I Googled bivocational sermon preparation, and I think your blog post on it from maybe September, this summer sometime, was the number one hit on it. And I thought it was really helpful, so I reached out to you.
Well, I appreciate it. You know, being bivocational is relatively new to me. I started thinking about the whole issue of how I'm preparing for sermons, because for the better part of my life, I've been full-time in vocational ministry all of my adult life. As a matter of fact, I started preaching when I was 17 years old and then went on staff at churches starting at the age of 19. But in these last few years, I have begun serving bivocationally in ministry. So I wrote those blog posts really as just kind of processing for myself, how am I going to do this? And I had a few guys who had asked me, and so I put it up at my blog, and has gotten a good reaction, has been helpful for some people. So I appreciate you reaching out to me so that I could share maybe a little bit more widely of how the Lord has been helping me to get this work done, because obviously it can be and should be, I guess, on some occasions, you know, really time consuming. And so for those of us that are bivocational, we just have to find the right pace for ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll talk all about that. You know, we'll get into maybe even what your weekly schedule looks like. But before we jump into that, let me ask a broader backstory question. I looked a little bit at and listened to some of your sermons and stuff, just some for some background for this. I see you do not do the lectionary. It looks like you typically do different series. So, and as a matter of fact, I even listened to your sermon from this week where you talked about how you're primarily the one who picks the topics. And so I feel like it's probably safe to ask you, how do you pick your topics? How far in advance and how do you work out what series you're going to do?
I'm from a background that sociologists would call a low church evangelical. I come out of a Baptist tradition where the work of sermon preparation and even choosing of the series usually falls onto the shoulder of the preaching pastor or the senior pastor. And so what I find to be most helpful is to plan pretty far in advance, especially in this season of life where I'm a bivocational pastor. I like to plan out at least 6 months in advance. And so right now, as you and I are having this conversation, as we're getting ready to go into next week, it's going to be Christmas week, I plan on taking the time that I'm going to be off from my full-time job, and I hope to get at least 9 months of sermon series planned out. So I spend time with the elders of my church. We have a group of men who serve in that capacity in our church family, and I sit down with other church leaders, and then certainly I just spend some time in prayer about what's happening in the life of our church. And so I assess what happened last year and where we went in terms of sermon series, and what were the major themes that were happening in the life of the ministry of our church and where we were engaging most deeply into mission. And then I spend time praying about what books of the Bible I should be preaching through, what kind of very standard topics are applicable into our church's community, and began to, you know, I put all of that up on a whiteboard and began praying through it, and then just begin moving the pieces around to see if I can put the puzzle together. If left to my own devices, I would love just to preach through books of the Bible. Those are my favorite kind of sermon series to listen to, and it's my favorite ones to preach. However, I find that certainly in the life of our church right now, there are some major issues through which we need to address as a church family, and some cultural issues that we need to address in our community. And so I'm praying through right now in kind of what kind of order do we do that in the year to come.
And the structure of your church, you're the teaching pastor by vocational. It looks like there's other, like, talk a little bit about the leadership alongside you in that, and what different roles people have, particularly in the sermon process and preaching. And
yeah, I would say for a Baptist church, which specifically we are aligned with the Southern Baptist Convention with that denomination, we probably have a little bit of an unusual church structure for our particular tribe of churches in that we are an elder-led model. It's something that's relatively new to the history of our church. And so we began a transition, or I should say our congregation began a transition really about 5 years ago after what some people might refer to as a cathartic moment. It was a very negative moment in the history of the church where there was a great deal of pain. And so the church made the decision to begin moving in the direction of having an elder-led rather than a congregational polity. And as we have just dug into the scriptures and the elders of the church invited me to come alongside of them to study through what does it look like to serve biblically as an elder? What does that word mean? It's more than just being on a church council. It's more than just one more committee that kind of runs things. And so we studied through that, and I serve as one of the elders in the life of our church. And so we do have full-time vocational staff, and then we do have bivocational staff like myself, and then we have members of the church at large who serve as elders. And so within that structure, when it comes to the preaching ministry, the elders and I, both those that are laymen, which is a term that I'm trying to find a substitute for. I don't like that term. I'm trying to figure out another word for that. But for those guys, and then there's one other of the elders who's a full-time staff member. He's actually referred to on our church staff as the executive pastor, and he's essentially kind of the minister of ministries. He helps lead the rest of the staff in their work. There's six of us all together, and I will put together what I think are kind of should be the upcoming series of messages. I'll bring it to that group of guys. We'll wrestle about it, talk about it. I don't think we've ever had any kind of stringent kind of debate about those things, but I lead those discussions, and they usually are very happy to add to it. Just last night, I was talking to a couple of our elders about some particular topics that they brought to me that I had not even thought about as of yet. And so we usually land on a schedule of the series, what are going to be these big rocks. And then I'll sit down with a couple of the other staff members that our worship leader and then age group staff members as well to kind of get their input about what's going on in the life of their ministries and how can we make sure that everything is still moving in one singular direction. Because I wouldn't want the teaching series going on in the worship service to go in one direction when I know that maybe the student minister is going to be teaching on a similar subject. And then I involve some other leaders in the church as well for us to decide collectively where the series is going to go.
Yeah. And how often, what percentage of the preaching do you do?
I would say over the last probably 8 or 9 months, I have probably done, I would say probably 80% of the preaching. We're getting ready to make a change in that, though. Our church is one of the many thousands of churches that has gone to a multi-site model. And so we began another campus of our church in a different area of town. And because of that, we have two worship services on Sunday morning in two different locations. And they're at different times. And so it is physically possible. And on most Sundays over these last few months, as we started that other campus, I preach at both campuses. I preach at one and I finish up preaching and I jump in my car and drive to the other campus. It is not ideal, not in the least. However, what we have seen happen, which has been really amazing, and it's just, we're very grateful for what God has been doing, is that there have been several other men who have come into the life of our church who, because they moved here to our city of Nashville to work here, they have been bivocational pastors in the past that have great teaching gifts. And so already we've seen that God's brought several other guys into the life of our church who've got those gifts, and that we're gonna create and craft a teaching team so that there's not this one person kind of running around on Sunday mornings and can't fully participate in any one given worship service because he's got to get to the other one.
Right.
So I do primarily most of the preaching now. However, I think that will probably become in the years ahead, or in the year ahead, I should just speak maybe a little more short term, that I'll preach generally almost every Sunday. I would say I'll probably preach 45 Sundays out of the year, but primarily I'll just be on one campus because we'll have multiple teaching pastors in our church.
Yeah. So that obviously the desire is not to go to video, but to keep live preachers. Will they is that, do you imagine that everyone will be preaching the same topic and maybe even a very similar sermon, or what do you think that'll look like?
Yeah, our intention is that we will be preaching a very similar sermon. Already, I have begun the process with these other guys in the life of our church to where I'll put my sermon outline, my notes in front of them, especially on those weeks that I'm, you know, struggling through a particular passage and really trying to get to the core ideas and not be pulled off in some kind of tangent. And so we've already begun kind of practicing how would we study together. And so even though we have a little bit different preaching styles, they're similar enough to where we could work off of the same basic outline. And so we will do that. We'll preach the same basic points, but it will get communicated certainly in a different style. One guy is more of a storyteller. Another guy is much more kind of doctrinally oriented. My bent, I don't know, I guess you'd have to listen some to my sermons. I shouldn't speak too loudly for how it is I think I preach in comparison to how I do preach, but I'm always looking to try to find where's the core rebellion in our life and where's the key application of this great truth of God into your life on Tuesday afternoon when you're on the assembly line and you got a coworker who's, you know, that you're at odds with. So yeah, I'm always looking for that kind of real life. How do we live out our faith in light of God's greatness? So
yeah.
So hopefully they'll be complementary to one another, but we will be preaching the same sermons.
Yeah. Okay. Well, then let's jump into it. I mean, let's talk about, you know, you've got months outlined now, and you know, let's just take it down. Maybe if you want to even think of a specific sermon as an example, that's great. But let's talk through what is your process from the point a sermon has been designated for a certain day. What's your process look like to get that from that original title that you come up with all the way to that final outline that you're going to take with you up on the stage on Sunday morning? What's that time frame look like?
Yeah, so when I plan out a series, so let me just start there just to give one other detail. When I plan out a series, normally what I do is I'll have the series title, a kind of a working title for the sermon, the core passage of what that sermon is going to cover, and then several major ideas of bullet points. So I've got a starting point when I get to the week of prep, and most of my preparation is done week by week. I know there are some guys that they plan out, they do their sermon prep weeks in advance, and they're constantly fine tuning. But generally, my sermon prep for Sunday starts on the previous Sunday. It's usually on the drive home from worship service. I didn't intend it to be that way, but I've kind of made myself get there. And some of it has been just because of the history of our church, because there's been some pain. There's been a fair amount of pain over the last few years in the life of our church. There's been a lot of shifting and a lot of changes. And so I'm constantly looking for how does next Sunday's message connect with what everyone just experienced in the worship service and the stories that I heard about what happened in their life group. I'm already churning on how do these two things connect. And then Sunday nights are a time where I just will read my passage, and it's just I catch some time just to meditate a little bit and just to contemplate on the implications of this passage in my life. And then my major sermon prep time, I try to make it happen on Monday nights. If it doesn't happen on Monday nights, I try to make it happen on Tuesday nights. But one of those nights, I get home from work, I eat dinner with my family, I have two teenage boys, so I try to make sure that I don't cheat them of time that they need to have and you know, hanging out with my wife, Angie. And usually most of the people in my house are going to bed around 9 o'clock or 9:30. But somewhere along around 7:30, I'll start pulling my books off the shelf and doing all of that kind of academic work of outlining a passage and seeing what other people have said about it. And it can, you know, typically can be a late night, but for me, I would imagine for most people, you know, that's the fun, you know, that's a lot
sure.
part of it all. And so those are that Monday night or Tuesday night is normally my heavy preparation time. Now, in terms of what happens on that night, I think I've already mentioned, my preference is to go out of a core passage for a sermon. I can preach topically, and all of us can do all of these different types, but I just do better when there's a passage that I'm going to preach from rather than an idea that I'm going to grab seven different passages from seven different books of the Bible. And so I'll take that passage and I just, completely old school, I just take a piece of paper and a pen and I start rewriting the passage on the pad of paper. And I have this weird indentation kind of schematic that I do for every phrase of the passage, of the major points. And then I'll indent for, the supporting ideas and making bullet point lists out of the passage so I wind up with what I think is kind of a visual representation of what are the big ideas in the passage. What are the major phrases and key words? And so I've got this handwritten, representation of the passage itself in front of me, which then becomes the building block for everything else that I do. And then, obviously I'll compare that to commentaries and Bible dictionaries and word studies to make sure that I haven't missed any key ideas. But those few hours that I spend with the passage, early on in the week, it is really where normally my major point. Then as I go through the rest of the week, there are some other times of major study, but a lot of it's just more meditative type of study. Usually on Tuesday mornings, I just try to catch some time before I go to work. To spend time with the passage again, and it's given me all night to sleep, and you wake up refreshed and with a fresh mind to say, did I really get it? For me, Wednesday evening becomes kind of a breaking point. Even if I teach on Wednesday nights with my church family, usually there's Bible studies going on, and I'm, 9 times out of 10, I'm leading one. But Wednesday night is when I really need to email anything that I want to be used during our worship service on the video screen. And we've got, the video projectors that show the passage and major points of the message. And I need to get that into our church office on Wednesday nights. And so normally by that time, I have at least firmed up what the major points of the message are that I want everybody to see. Mm-hmm. And so I get that into our church office. And then for the rest of the week, whether it's, for Thursday, Friday and into Saturday, it's just fine tuning all of the sub points of what's going to be on my outline, all the tweaking. And then Saturday, sometime along on Saturday, just depending on what family activities are going on, I'll usually take about an hour to an hour and a half to do all of the final fine tuning and tweaking of the message. And I'll print out a copy of my notes. And I usually try to get it on one sheet of paper, landscape format, fold it in half, and I rubber band it into my Bible. So that I can just hold it right there in my hand. I'll rubber band it into the place where the passage is. But normally that set of notes never makes it to Sunday because, on Sunday morning, I'll get up with some fresh idea that I'll need to scribble or scratch out right. something. Right. And so I'm normally, reprinting out notes on Sunday morning, with something highlighted or some new, thought or, I've been able to talk through it and there's a different turn of phrase that I want to use. So for me, it really is an all week endeavor to prepare a sermon.
For sure. Yeah. And briefly mention what your day job is.
Yeah, my day job is with Lifeway Christian Resources. We are a large Christian publishing house along with other things. And within the company, my official title is Director of Adult Ministry Publishing. And so anything from Lifeway that is a dated Bible study, like what many people would consider Sunday school material, magazines or devotionals, all of those publications are under my team. And so I have a team of about 70 people that I manage. And it's, it's a huge privilege. We get to provide Bible studies to about 3 million people a week. And so I'm very, very pleased to do it. And it's a great job, but obviously it's a time consuming one, but one that where, we get to initiate ministry, even through our work day.
Well, and that was, you know, that was kind of my question for you is, you know, how sympathetic is your job? Not in terms of hours taken away from your job, but, you know, certainly you're not doing sermon preparation during the day. But I think one of the challenges of doing bivocational work is if your mind is going in a completely contrary direction to, you know, preaching, you know, my bivocational work is web development. So that doesn't always lend itself to thinking through a text.
Right? No, it does not.
You know, but so I'm wondering, even throughout the course of a day, if you're finding some of what you're interacting with in your job, does that come into play in your sermons very much?
You know, not very often. There have been a couple of times where obviously I've gotten some great ideas for like maybe a sermon series or in the course of, you know, doing some review work of one of our magazines or one of our devotional publications, I'll, you know, find an illustration that I'll think, wow, that would really go with one of my sermons that I'm going to preach in a couple of weeks from now, or I need to hold on to that idea. But certainly my environment, I recognize I'm really blessed to be in this environment because most bivocational guy pastors are not also working at a Christian publishing company. And so, you know, it's a really friendly environment. However, I try to be very careful. And one of the things I even wrote in one of the blog posts where I talked about bivocational ministry was that we have to take a great deal of care to not steal time away from our employers.
Yes. Yeah.
And you know, the temptation is there where, you know, if you have an office, you can shut your door and, you know, I'm going to try to catch 30 or 45 minutes of sermon prep while I'm on the clock. And, you know, and we just can't allow ourselves to fall prey to that. And so my supervisor knows what my other job is, has been very friendly that if I need to, you know, take a little bit of a longer lunch hour to run over to the church office to handle something, or, you know, there's a funeral that I need to be in attendance of, things of that nature. You know, they are willing to manage those things along with me. But there's a breaking point where it goes from, hey, you know, I let you take a few long lunch hours, but you're at a point where you need to take a little bit of, you need to take a vacation hour for this, but it is still a work environment where I need to, you know, own up to my responsibilities.
Yeah, for sure. Well, let me backtrack in this a little bit. Now that we have a general overview of what your schedule looks like, let's talk more about Monday and Tuesday night. I love the idea that you describe about, you know, how you just handwrite out and break down the text, and that helps, you know, to visualize it. But then you talked about how you go into some of your key resources. What are some of your favorite, you know, you mentioned specifically dictionaries and commentaries and all that. What are some of your favorites that you find yourself going to time and again for that?
Yeah. One of the places that I'll often turn to first is the set of commentaries, the New International Commentary on the Old Testament or the New International Commentary on the New Testament. Those have just been really good standbys for me. And then also the set, which is the Expositor's Biblical Commentary, the EBC. Mm-hmm. You know, those are just, I have found those to be sets of books that have very few duds in them. And it's certainly one of those things that we've got, you know, when you're bivocational or when you're vocational, buying commentaries is an expensive endeavor. And yeah. So you've got to be really careful about what you buy. And you can't just buy an entire set because you like a few of them. You still have to purchase, you know, according to who's the author and, you know, does it get really, you know, does it get great reviews and has it been helpful to a lot of people? I find that those two sets of commentaries have been they have always been helpful for me. And so those are the places I turn to first. I've also, there's a Walter Elwell, E-L-W-E-L-L, has an evangelical dictionary of theology that whenever I'm dealing with a particularly heady concept that I will turn to him to find, you know, to be able to navigate through and make sure that I find the right academic terms that I want, that I need to use, and then to be able to break it down so that the person in the pew gets it. Recently, I was preaching, as I've been in this series about the incarnation, and I was in a passage that used the word propitiation. Hmm. And nobody uses that word. That's not a real word to anybody but preachers.
I think that's even the first time it's been mentioned on this podcast.
So there you go. Well, I'm glad I was able to bring one verse to you. And so that was something that even in my message, you know, I made a joke about it, you know, about how this is not a normal word for everybody and how, you know, I want to try to, you know, bring some clarity to what this word really means. And so I, you know, I'm a big proponent of make sure you find a great dictionary that you can use. Yeah, there are some sets of sermons that I go to. One is by Charles Spurgeon, which is a pretty, you know, standard set of that a lot of guys have, and it can be very helpful. Another one by Martin Luther. But then there are two other sets of sermons that have been just immensely helpful to me that maybe are not as well known. One is by G. Campbell Morgan. He was for many years the pastor at Westminster Chapel in London, England. And and many people have called Charles Spurgeon the Prince of Preachers. G. Campbell Morgan is often referred to as the Prince of Expositors, and just a great stuff. And then there's another set of sermons by Alexander McLaren, which is just he was so poetic and so pithy, and was able to get to the heart of the matter in terms of how the truth about God's character intersects with the truth of human character. He always helps me to see, you know, where it is that my life bumps up against the truth of the passage of Scripture. And then, yeah, there's certain study Bibles that I find to be really helpful because they're often written for the layman. And so they help me to get down to make sure that I'm staying at the right level, not being too rudimentary or elementary with people, but I get out of the academia and make sure that I speak on a level that people are going to understand. So the study Bible that goes along with the Holman Christian Standard Bible, the HCSB study Bible, is a great one. The ESV, English Standard Version, their study Bible is also fantastic. Those are probably the two that I turn to most often. So, yeah, those resources are helpful.
Those sermons you talked about, is that just manuscripts in books?
Yeah, they are. It's just they're straight up manuscripts of the sermons that they preached. And certainly there are others that go along with certain books of the Bible, like D. Martin Lloyd-Jones. It's like an 8-volume set of his sermons on the book of Ephesians. And it's just, I mean, he would take one verse from Ephesians and he could preach multiple sermons on it. And so it's just their manuscripts of the sermons. So, there will be nothing like that left behind from Philip Nation because I never manuscript sermons.
Are these all, but see, now they'll be recorded and someday someone will manuscript them.
Yeah, one of these days.
Are these all books that you are pulling off your bookshelf in your home office, or do you use Bible software for all of this?
All of those that I've mentioned for the most part are books that I've got in my office. Yeah. Whenever it is I'm going to preach a new book of the Bible, normally I'll kind of construct a long list of all of the resources that I would like to have and then prioritize them and then buy, you know, maybe the top 4 or 5. I've actually recently done that as next year I'm relatively sure I'm going to preach through the book of Ecclesiastes. And so I've begun putting together the list of books that I plan to get for that. The Bible software, you mentioned that, and obviously more and more guys are turning to the use of Bible software, not buying physical books as much because they are huge and it takes a lot of room in your house, and oftentimes they're more expensive to buy the physical books. I have found for my own study that Word Search has been the software that I've been using over the last year or so.
Yeah.
And so it's just my preferred software right now. But who knows it? You know, we'll see if that lasts the whole time, if that's the one that I stick with for good and forever. But Word Search is the one that I prefer right now.
Sounds like you're using that more, though, for word study kinds of things, not necessarily for references. You know,
it is.
Yeah.
That's right.
All right. Well, then let me divert this a little bit more. Just in terms of the ongoing process, you know, illustrations come up and all that. Do you have a particular kind of system that you like to follow where you're filing away as you're coming across illustrations? You know, are you filing them away, or do you find that your sermon illustrations come to you on a week-to-week basis?
I would say that by and large, they come to me on a week-to-week basis. However, for those that I that I want to keep filed away. I'm a big fan of the software, the app Evernote.
Oh, yeah.
And so I've got it on my smartphone and on my iPad and on my computer. If guys are not using Evernote, I highly recommend it because it keeps all of that information synced across all of your platforms and it's out there in the cloud. And so I'll set up folders in Evernote for all of my sermon series that I know that are upcoming. And that way, if I run across any kind of story or illustration, or even if I just get an idea for a particular sermon that is still several weeks from now, rather than trying to find the Word document that's on my computer and keeping it uploaded into a place where it can be synced, I'll just dump the idea into the Evernote file for that particular sermon series, and then it's waiting for me when I get around to the actual construction of that message.
Yeah. You know, you're kind of building a database in particular for upcoming sermons, but you haven't necessarily tried to keep, which not many people do, I don't think, but you haven't tried to keep any kind of big database of all your favorite illustrations.
No. And a lot of that is because most of my illustrations are events that are happening in the culture at the time.
Yeah.
I don't very often pull from some kind of historical narratives or accounts. Certainly there are big issues, you know, there are those big rocks in our history, you know, whether it's our history as a country, or just, you know, those recognizable moments in the history of civilization that you can pull from. But no, I've never kept that long, you know, that big filing cabinet of illustrations or a big Word document folder about it all, because they're usually kind of in the moment for me.
Yeah. You mentioned, now I'm going even further back or further forward in the timeline. I'm not sure what you could call this.
All right.
But you mentioned that on the way home on Sunday, you're already starting to think about next week's sermon. I'm in a daze afterward on Sunday, so compliments to you. But
Thank you.
Do you have some kind of process of review that's built in where, you know, because if you're already jumping onto the next sermon, do you have any kind of feedback loop or anything where you evaluate how your sermons have been going or sermons went and people that speak into that?
Well, first of all, there's my wife and my two teenage sons. There's always a lot of feedback from them. No, they're super kind. And so I'm always grateful to get their encouragement. I think I would probably fall into the category of where most guys are, though, when it comes to preaching, is that I have a hard time finding anybody who is willing to really critique my sermons with me. I've asked for it. You know, I've asked for other members of our church and our elders and our staff members. Hey, you know, what didn't go well? You know, what's not been happening well in my sermons, or, you know, what do I need to sharpen up on? And people are just very reticent to say that. It's one of the reasons why I'm very grateful that I'm in a position where I can have a preaching team, because I think that we will find it to be a little bit easier as the days go by to really help critique one another in terms of, did a point connect or not? You know, be able to separate it from the, you know, I'm telling you, you're an ungodly person because the sermon didn't do well. But instead, be able to say, hey, I trust you. So on Sundays, when I'm traveling home, I'm thinking about, you know, the message that I just delivered. And on most Sundays, I delivered it twice at two different campuses. And so I'm thinking about, how did it connect with both of those places? And what was the response? And what were the conversations that I had after the service? And did they connect with the major point or some tangent? Was it an idea that everybody felt as if they kind of already knew that and it was just reinforcing it? Or was it a brand new challenge that was laid before everyone in terms of engaging with the mission of God? And then I do have the benefit that all of our sermons are video recorded. And so usually on Tuesday, a lot of times I'll take my lunch hour and I'll get my lunch and I'll bring it back to my office. And while I eat lunch at my desk, I'll watch my sermon. I try to do that. Yes, it is a horrible experience. Yeah. But I try to do that. And so very recently, one of the things I discovered was that there was a particular hand motion that I was making constantly through the whole message. This one particular hand motion I kept doing over and over and over again. And it was one of those where it's like, I don't ever remember intentionally making that hand motion, or that it's a hand motion that I make very often. And it seemed just very, you know, out of the ordinary for me. And so it's made me aware to kind of make sure that, you know, even things like that don't become a distraction.
Yeah.
And then it just causes you to choose your words very carefully, to hear whether or not 2 points that you thought during the sermon prep time were 2 very distinct points, but then in the middle of the sermon it felt like, wow, that you were saying the same thing all over again. Your first point and your second point, or your second point and your third point, were really one, and you could have collapsed all of that together.
Mm-hmm.
And so it helps me to pick up on all of those kind of issues, and whether or not an illustration connected or not. Did I need to find a different kind of illustration? Did I limp into the conclusion of the message? I had a really great message, but I didn't spend enough time on the landing strip of, you know, how are we going to get everybody from the message to the response to the message? And so I try to discipline myself to do that every week. It happens on most weeks, but there certainly are times when I don't get around to it.
Yeah. Which, I mean, I can't imagine you ever look forward to Tuesday lunch hour.
It's tough.
As you're winding down, you know, in the week, winding down that sermon, are there certain criteria that you have, and we'll wind down with this and maybe one other question after this, but are there certain criteria that you look at the outline you've put together through, maybe questions you ask to see, you know, make sure that you're... Just, are there criteria you look at a sermon outline through before you preach it to make sure that you've got everything covered?
Yeah, there are. I've got, when I dissect, it's kind of sometimes the way I put it, when I dissect a passage, there are generally 5 questions that I ask of every passage. And I think, you know, my 5 questions are probably a rehash of somebody else's 6 questions, which is a rehash of somebody else's 4 questions. So, you know, these are probably nothing new. But I always try to answer these questions. Number one is, how does it reveal God's character? How does this passage reveal God's character? And then my sermon, am I communicating that clearly?
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, how does it reveal God's redemptive plan? Now, so how does this help the people who are listening to me see that God has a plan of hope, mercy, and forgiveness, that sin's going to be judged, that he has a desire to redeem people? You know, how does it help them to see that God wants to make everything new? Thirdly, I ask the good, you know, interpretive hermeneutic question, how did it apply to the original hearers? And so when Paul was writing this to Galatians, you know, what did it mean to the Galatians? When Jeremiah was speaking it in his contemporary day, what did it mean right then? I always try to make sure that I've clearly thought through, you know, what was the original hearer, you know, what was the meaning there, so that I don't run off in some weird direction. The 4th question that I always ask is, how does this truth apply, or how does this truth address my personal relationship with Christ? A lot of how I preach in my current church is I talk about us collectively, you know, the body of Christ, and how we're going to do the faith together, how we're going to do ministry and mission together. But the response time at the end of a message is intensely personal. And so I always try to find, you know, those cues from the passage of, how does this address an individual in the interior of their heart, you know, in the dark places of sin that they've hidden, you know, in the light of day of their celebrations of what God's been doing in their life. And then the final question that I always ask when I'm, you know, constructing a sermon with the passage is, how does my heart rebel against the truth of this passage? You know, I want to address the rebellion. I don't necessarily say, hey, all right, everybody, I'm going to talk to you now about how you're all going to rebel against this passage. But I always try to find a way in the construction of a sermon to address the issue of what are natural tendency is to run in the opposite direction. Where are we, Jonah, to this word that just came from God, where we're going to run in the opposite direction? And if I can address that in the message, you know, if I address it in sermon prep, then that's going to be good in my own personal life with Christ. And then if I can address it in the message itself, then it's going to help people be ready for the temptations that they're going to face in the week ahead after hearing this truth from the scriptures. Yeah. So those are five questions that I, you know, kind of set up as criteria that when I'm constructing a sermon, did I highlight God's character, his redemptive plan, the message to the original hearers? How does this address our personal relationship with Christ? And how does our heart rebel against the truth of the passage?
Almost sounds like the way you're describing it, you either directly or indirectly deal with those both on Monday, Tuesday night, and then later in the week when you're trying to finalize.
Yeah, I do. On Monday and Tuesday nights, when I do that handwritten version of the passage so that I can look at it, you know, and read it and mull over it and try to break it down, that's a lot of times that's where I'm trying to get to those first three of God's character, his redemptive plan, and the original meaning to the original hearers. And then the number four and five of how does this address my personal relationship and how do I rebel, that begins to work itself out during the rest of the week into the finer points.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you, I said one more question. I'm going to ask you two more questions.
That's fine.
They're
ahead.
Shorter. One of them being, what are some books that have been really helpful for you? They might be related to preaching, they might not, but you feel like have been helpful for you in forming how you approach preaching?
Yeah, I would say that my favorite book on preaching is by G. Campbell Morgan, and it's just simply entitled Preaching. For me, it was the book that was most formative in the early years that I was in ministry. Mm-hmm. The other books that have been helpful to me, Marketplace Preaching by Calvin Miller. Yeah. Calvin was one of the most brilliant speakers and writers and thinkers, I think, of the 20th century, that he'll get his due in history, I do believe. But he was just great. Another book is by Robert Smith. He's an African-American pastor. He's a professor now at Beeson Divinity School. His book is entitled Doctrine That Dances. Hmm. It was very helpful for me to hear his perspective on preaching from another ethnicity. And so I would highly recommend that book. So those are a few of the books that have been helpful for me most over the last few years.
Yeah, and the other question, I realized that I got so excited to talk about bivocational stuff. We talked around what your church is, but
yeah,
tell us just briefly the name of your church and what your Sundays look like. You've covered some of this, but
yeah. Well, the name of our church is simply The Fellowship. And as I've mentioned, we've got two different locations. And so it's The Fellowship at Two Rivers, which is the original campus of the church. And then we have The Fellowship at Mount Juliet. Mount Juliet is another suburb in a different part of Nashville. And so a normal Sunday morning for us is it is a contemporary styled church. At the Two Rivers campus, we have a church building where all of our Bible study groups primarily meet on the campus prior to the worship service. At Mount Juliet, all of our Bible study groups meet in people's homes during the week, and so everyone shows up there for the worship service, and there's a kids' worship as well that's going on during the same time and preschool ministry. Our worship services are relatively simply structured. Singing, a time of welcome, a time of encouragement and prayer by one of our church leaders or our elders or staff members, and then the time of the message, and then the response time. Within our congregation, the sermon normally goes anywhere from 28 to kind of 35 minutes. I try to keep it closer to the 28-minute mark, but as we all know, sometimes that just doesn't happen, much to the chagrin of our worship leaders sometimes, who try to plan all these things out to the second. But at both of our locations, our response time after the message is a couple of songs. It's usually at least two songs. And during that time, we receive the offering, and we have people available for prayer, for members that are, and for people that are in attendance that want to get an answer about what does it mean to follow Christ, or what does it look like to be a part of this church, or, you know, they got some burden on their heart. And our response time is, it also includes communion. So generally at the conclusion of every message, I or whoever's preaching that day will give instruction about here are the different ways that you can respond to this message. There are people available to pray with you. There are places for you to come and pray if you just like to come and kneel and to pray. And then we'll give a brief description as well as to why we have the elements of the Lord's Supper available and who we would invite to be a part of it. And because it's not... it's not just something that we take lightly, but we have a lot of people that's part of their faith journey is that maybe they've come out of a tradition and now they're attending our church where communion happened every Sunday. And so we want to make that available as a remembrance and the memorial of Christ's work on our behalf. And then our services normally kind of end with a bang. Our last song is usually very high energy. We want to send everybody out with a big word of encouragement and kind of that final benediction statement that, you know, Christ is with you and he is for you and he has invited you to be on mission with him. So that's kind of a quick rundown of what our service looks like.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for your time. For someone who wants to, you know, keep up with what you're, I will certainly link to your blog posts, but why don't you share the name of your website and the church's website and your Twitter handle?
Yeah. Well, if people want to keep up with me, they can always go over to my blog. It is philipnation.net, and it's Philip with one L, and it's, again, .net. They can follow me on Twitter, at philipnation, and I probably post there far too often and am far too snarky, but it's just it's a fun place to be and to interact with folks. And I try to respond to tweets and to direct messages as often as I can. And then if people are interested about our church, they can go to our website. It is thefellowship.cc. I know that's kind of an unusual ending to a URL, but it is .cc. And there they can even find, in the archives, they can find all the videos of our worship services and would be glad to hear anybody's feedback about my preaching and how I can do it better.
We're all going to go look for those hand gestures.
There you go. Exactly.
Well, thank you so much and blessings to you.
Well, I appreciate it. Thanks so much, and I hope that a few of the things I've said will be of encouragement to some of the folks out there.
Yeah.